And we are live. Hey y'all, it's your girl who swirls, Chris Karazin from Beyond Black and White, coming at you with the much, much anticipated interview between me and Lennon Honor. Lennon, say hello.
Hello everyone, greetings.
Now, Lennon, why don't you start by telling the audience a little bit about yourself and your work?
Yes, well, I would say that in the first place, I'm a husband and father. My wife and I, we've been together for 14 years now. We have five beautiful children, and my family is the most important thing to me. It's interesting because the reason why I got into all the other things that I'm doing is because of my family. I've always wanted to do the best that I could for my family, my wife and my children. And in particular, I wanted to make sure that my children were being raised appropriately. And as a consequence, I've spent the last decade looking into various various media aspects of media that can do quite a few negative things, including destabilizing family institutions. Also, it can also have an adverse effect in terms of media programming, have an adverse effect on male-female relationships. And I'm very careful. I want my children to have positive relationships when they grow up. And therefore, a lot of the programming, it's important for parents to make sure that we try to keep our children clear of that type of programming. And so over the years, I've done documentaries on media programming. I've done a lot of radio shows on the topic, a lot of videos on YouTube on the topic. And then more recently, my wife and I, we've gone on this campaign, I would say over the last 4 years, to really focus in on male-female relationships and the family institution raising children, how to establish positive relationships, how to prepare for a positive relationship, and then how to maintain a positive relationship over time. And that's pretty much where we're at this point. We're trying to promote as much as possible positive relationships and help other people to experience positive relationship, because I'll tell you one thing, when you are in a positive relationship, life is a lot more pleasant compared to when you're in a negative one.
Absolutely. And you and I connected. Like, I had heard of you, I've even seen some of your videos, but we connected because we both did video, not planned, but we both did a video saying that NWA and the movie Straight Outta Compton, maybe you want to rethink celebrating this type of movie. And of course it went on to be a blockbuster hit, but you know, not everything that's good is good for you. And I know that you got a lot of pushback. I know I got a lot of pushback. But it did get the conversation started, and it inspired you to do something. It inspired you to create a project. Now, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So when we talk about media programming, there has not been a group in existence in the realm of the hip hop music genre that has had as much of a negative and adverse effect on male-female relationships than NWA Niggas with Attitudes. And I remember growing up listening to the group. I remember the songs. I remember memorizing some of the songs. Some of the songs were so vile and disrespectful, in particular disrespectful towards women. A lot of misogynistic views. There was a lot of quote unquote black on black crime, the promotion of it, death, destruction, murder, abuse of other men, abuse of women, on and on and on. When I was a child, I didn't have any critical insight, and I didn't ask critical questions like, you know, is this stuff really, is it positive? Is it going to help me to, you know, become the best man that I can be, or become the best father that I can be, or to become the best human being that I can be? I didn't ask questions. How would this impact my perception of women, or even my perception of men for that matter? So growing up listening to that music, I didn't have the intellectual faculties. It's interesting. Here we are 25 years later, and now I'm, you know, married for 14, well, been with my wife for 14 years. We have five beautiful children, and I've been doing all this work about media manipulation and trying to keep my children protected from a lot of the sexist programming and the misogynistic program, particularly my sons, to keep them protected from that psychosexual programming. And so when it was announced, this is going back a few years ago, when it was announced that there was going to be a biopic that was going to be created in for NWA Niggas with Attitudes, I found that to be quite fascinating. And one of the things I did was I started to think about the general themes that were being presented in their music. And I started to ask questions like whether or not this would be in the best interest of people, you know, for this movie to come out to glorify the group. And then what would happen as a consequence of the glorification of the group, that there would be people that would go back and listen to NWA's discography, their music, without critical thought. And then I thought about, well, that means that the next generation is going to get the same type of programming that I got that was totally dysfunctional. So when I heard that, I started thinking about doing a documentary, and I've done documentaries on hip hop in particular. I have another series, Hip Hop, The Hidden Hand, The Degradation of Black Masculinity. One of my most controversial documentaries to date. I got a lot of backlash from that. I got death threats from that. it was extreme. It was absolutely crazy. People who were in the industry, rappers, upset, and also people who were not in the industry, hip hop fans. So ultimately, I decided that I was going to do a critical analysis of NWA. And I started my research. And what I did was I went through all of their albums, their four albums in the discography. I went track by track, song by song, and I calculated which words were being used the most and how often. And then what were the major themes that were being presented? I did it track by track, album by album, and then I compiled all of that data. The reason why this is important in terms of critical analysis is because when you figure out what were the major themes, what words are being repeated over and over again, words like bitch, words like hoe, you know, skeezers, I'm a player, I'm a pimp, my gang, even though it wasn't necessarily gang, quote unquote, gang violence per se, but just the concept of repeating it over and over again. You begin to figure out what was the theme that they were really promoting. And you know what? The major theme that they promoted in their discography, and I have all the data already collected. I spent about the last 2.5 months doing this. In their four albums, there's 48 tracks total in their four albums, and this is just 3 hours and 9 minutes and 44 seconds of music, okay? They disrespected women a total of 553 times.
Wow. And then magnify that about how many times, how many hours the songs were played. I even envision, you know, people rolling down the street listening to that music in the hood in their Chevy Impalas, about to do drive-bys. And I don't think that that's like far-fetched. Is that, am I reaching when I say that?
No. And see, there's a lot of people that say that it didn't have that type of influence, but I grew up in Southern California, and I can tell you, with absolute certainty, that it had a major impact on a lot of my friends. In point of fact, I had friends who were living in middle-class households, two-parent households. Parents had nice cars, had a nice house. I grew up poor in poverty, okay? Food stamps, government cheese, all that stuff. When they begin to listen to the music, in particular NWA, there's other musical forms too. I'm focusing specifically on NWA because of their movie coming out. When they begin to listen to NWA, now their language begins to change. How they dress begins to change. And then, and let me just explain this, that, you know, when words are repeated, so if they use the term nigga 385 times on four albums, and that's just 3 hours and 9 minutes, 385 times, that's significant, because you can imagine people are listening to the albums over and over and over again. If they're calling women bitches 208 times on four albums, that's just in 3 hours and 9 minutes. There are people who will listen to the whole discography. They can listen to the whole discography once a day, and they'll do that every single day. So you can imagine, you can calculate calling women bitches 208 times and just repeat it. What happens is the repetition becomes programming. This is something that I studied and began to understand about human psychology and the subconscious mind, especially when I really started to think about protecting my children from this type of programming, because children operate based upon the subconscious mind in the beginning. And then there's this transition phase where they begin to come into conscious awareness. They operate based upon their conscious awareness. It's a total transition. What happens is that if you repeat something over and over again, it could be a lie, it could be a phrase, it could be a term, okay? It can be a phrase that is disrespectful to women. If you repeat it enough, the child who hears it, who is impressionable, it will be imprinted. That language, that thought, that idea, that concept, that way of looking at women will be imprinted into their subconscious mind. And the more you repeat it, the more embedded it becomes. And what happens is, after a while, if you repeat it over and over again, it becomes a subconscious program. Now, I don't have time to get into what all that means in terms of subconscious program, but the point is that once it becomes a subconscious program, this could be anything, the books that you're reading, the movies that you're listening or that you're viewing, the television shows that you're watching, once it becomes imprinted as a subconscious program through repetition, now it begins to enact a level of behavior modification, unbeknownst of the person who's been programmed subconsciously. So what I'm saying is that there are a lot of people who they don't understand why they suffered so much in male-female relationships, and in particular males. I'm just going to say this, quote-unquote African-American males. They don't understand why exactly they've had so many hard difficulties in male-female relationships, not realizing that to a significant degree, their difficulty in establishing positive, loving, respectful relationships with women happens to do with the fact that the programming that they were listening to in NWA's music was teaching them how to disrespect women subconsciously, absolutely, unbeknownst to them consciously. So this
absolutely.
Just to tie to what you're saying. So this can be in terms of male-female relationships, but this can also be in terms of criminality. because a lot of what NWA was promoting was criminality, gun violence, different levels of abuse, not just towards women, but towards men. So if you have young males who are listening to this and they're being programmed, now it becomes a subconscious program, it will enact a level of behavior modification and they will begin to act out these types of programs. And I'm telling you all, I have friends and some of them still locked up to this day. There were other factors too, but I do know that the music they were listening to, NWA in particular, had a major impact in terms of their psychological development and set them on course to being criminal minded. And then now they're incarcerated. That is not by accident.
Right. And you see a lot of this dysfunction played out on YouTube. I mean, we're both YouTubers. And I got to tell you that for any black woman, like, it's a total fallacy. I remember reading something where Ice Cube said that we're not talking about all women when we say bitch. We're just talking about certain women. And the fact of the matter is we're all bitches. I mean, I could be having a conversation where I'm being completely respectful, not cursing, not angry, not using all caps, and somebody will just turn around and call me a bitch, and it comes out so easily like butter on a hot pan. It's like, it just rolls out of the mouth. Mm-hmm. Nigga just rolls out of the mouth. Like, it's just nothing. Like, it's just fodder in between thoughts.
It's subconscious now. Mm-hmm. That's to say that when I was growing up, the notion of calling women bitches, it was very taboo. I mean, I did it. I'm not going to lie. I did it, but there was always a reservation. I always felt uneasy about doing it. Usually when I was with friends, we were talking about women. You know, we would say things, well, yeah, that bitch, this kind of thing. And that whole, and this the language, and a lot of that language is in NWA. Again, 208 times they call women bitches on four albums, and just in 3 hours and 9 minutes. So if you're listening to the albums over and over again, you get the programming. They right. made it popular. They made it easy. They made it fashionable. And therefore, right. once it becomes a subconscious program, now it rolls off the tongue so easy. Let me just say this real quickly in terms of Ice Cube. One of the tracks, and this was on the first album, NWA and the Posse. The album was released, and then they re-released it 2 years later. And the fourth track on that album, which was titled Scream, was taken off, and they replaced it with a song titled "Bitch." A bitch is a bitch. It opens up with this: a bitch is a bitch. So if I'm poor or rich, I talk the exact same pitch. Now the title "bitch" don't apply to all women, but all women have a little bitch in them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're all bitches.
So in other words, all women have a little bitch in them. So they're all bitches.
Exactly.
So this like is what
A
I mean.
Plus B equals C. That's a right. equals C.
That's right. That's right. That's right. So even within the lyrical composition, there's contradictions, but it always revealed the truth that in terms of NWA members, their perception of women, very misogynistic, very disrespectful. They called women bitches. And it was a general term applied to women, including women that they didn't even know. And now yeah. today, these days, there are males, and this is a serious issue. They will call women bitches by default. So instead of honoring them as women, which is a major issue, you know, just in general amongst men, but in the African-American community in particular, preserving the honor of women. And you can do that by even how you speak of them. You deny their humanity by simply calling them a bitch, which is in reference to a female dog. No, they're not a female dog. These are human beings. These are the mothers of creation. These are the people who gave birth to you. You should afford them a level of respect and reverence that they deserve. But see, when you listen to this type of music, you get the opposite programming. And from a child, you don't even think about it. And a lot of males to this day don't realize why they have so many difficulties in male-female relationships. And it plays itself on YouTube with a lot of the males who have all these horrible things to say about women, but you ask them the critical question, are you in a positive relationship with one? No. Well, there's a reason why.
Now, let's talk about from the female's perspective or the woman's perspective. I hate to use that word female because it sounds dehumanizing.
Yes.
Let's talk about girls and women here and yes. how this type of music has affected them. When I had these conversations with young women, they were just like, well, they're not talking about me. Or on the other end, it's, well, it's just a song, or a lot of them just feel like it's okay. They feel like they've been hearing people calling them bitch and hoe and thought their whole life that they have no idea that it's wrong to mm-hmm. be talked to like that. Mm-hmm. And if you are offended by being called a bitch, then you're bougie. Mm-hmm. It's now, like, really?
Right, right, right. Something's wrong with you. But this speaks to the issue that And this happens for anyone. If you are abused long enough, you begin to normalize the abuse, and then you figure out ways of justifying it psychologically. Okay, I can justify this abuse for A, B, C, and D. These are the reasons why I can justify the abuse. But only if you've been abused long enough. And I've said this too, that there are a lot of women initially in terms of hip hop, because hip hop as a genre of music is very disrespectful of women in general. Okay, mm-hmm. In general, this cannot be denied. And for you men who say that it's not, either you are ignorant or you're a liar. So pick one of the two, because the truth is the truth. It's always right there in the lyrical analysis. You do the analysis of the lyrics, it tells the truth. The point is that in general, most young girls did not find hip hop to be appealing at first, because hip hop in essence was very disrespectful towards young girls and women. But what happens is that if it's played on the radio over and over again, or if you're listening to it and people are driving by and you're hearing it, people playing it inside the house, after a certain point, the abusive nature of it becomes normalized, and then you don't see it as being anything wrong. But then what happens as a psychological defense mechanism, because you've been abused so much, you've been listening to this abusive music, now you have to justify why it's okay. And then you make up excuses like, well, they're not talking about me, or it's not disrespectful, or that's something that, and they're talking about, or they're talking about a specific type of, no, that's not the issue. The issue is whether or not they are affording a level of respect and reverence that women deserve as human beings. And in most cases in hip hop, that does not take place. So women got to be careful, because we can make excuses, but see, this is another dynamic. We tend, in a sexist society, we tend to make excuses for male, dysfunctional male behavior, whether that's sexual behavior, whether that's in terms of the dialect that they're using or the language that they're using when they're speaking about women, in terms of their level of commitment. Yeah, men don't commit. Well, what you're doing is you're fortifying a particular behavior pattern that's dysfunctional. And women have to be very careful, because you have to hold men accountable, just like men have to hold men accountable. And to simply say that somehow it's not about me, or somehow it's not abusive, that doesn't solve the issue, because the programming and the negativity and the levels of abuse will continue to perpetuate themselves.
Absolutely. So now we have this situation where you've got music that is, but in theory, and we can talk about these theories, and I have a background in public relations, and I understand about communications, the repetition over and over again. You also have critics who say, it's just music. Music doesn't influence. You're weak-minded if you think music is going to influence your psyche. And the fact of the matter is that historically, music, especially for Black people, music was a way we communicated our history. Mm-hmm. I mean, how can you say that, you know, music, like songs like We Shall Overcome, does not affect the psyche? Mm-hmm. You can say that kind of music is positive and it affects the psyche, but then you can turn around and say that the same color people, the same people with the same background, can say a woman is a bitch, is a hoe, and I'm gonna shoot this dude because he don't got my money, and to say that that's not impactful is really disingenuous. Mm-hmm. And I want to understand, like, that level of denial is just so, and people want to fight so hard. They fight so hard to be entertained by this mess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's part of it is, it's a double-edged sword, because the truth of the matter is that music is a very powerful force. I actually went to college and studied music for 5 years. I trained as a musician from the age of 8 years old. I understand the power of music, not just instrumental music, but also lyrical music and the power of lyrics. This to say that if music doesn't have influence, then why is it that, you know, there were times in wartime where music was actually played over loudspeakers, so as to disrupt the enemy's progressions or to disrupt their psychological condition?
Right. And soldiers would go out, you play the drums. Why do you do that?
That's not by accident. Let me just explain this, that music as, most people see it as entertainment, but the truth of the matter is that it has the power to uplift a person's reality, to maintain a person's reality, or to devolve a person's reality. And it just depends on where you're at in your life. If you are in a positive situation right now in your life and you're listening to negative music, negative lyrical contents, calling each other niggas and bitches and hoes, it's going to devolve your reality over time. Okay, if you're in a good situation right now and you're listening to negative music over time through the repetition in the program, your reality will become more devolved. Now, if your reality is already devolved and you're listening to this type of music, then it's going to maintain your reality as is. You see what I'm saying? Yes. Now, if your situation is not all that great, and I think that we can all agree that for a lot of African-American folk, our situation is not all that great. it becomes imperative that we make sure that we listen to music that is going to uplift our situation. You see what I'm saying? So music has that power. And when we begin, and see, that's the thing, when we begin to say that it doesn't, that becomes an excuse to say it's okay for the music to be negative and toxic because it doesn't have that big of effect. But that is simply not true. I understand the power of music. I've studied it, but I've also seen it evidence and proof in my own life, how certain musical genres have impacted, in particular, the African-American community, in particular, gangster rap as an example, and how people's lives became more and more devolved to a large degree because of the music that they were listening to. And this cannot be denied. This evidence and proof. I mean, let me give an example, because I'm a very honest and sincere man. I'm going to tell you all, I have cousins, some of which are still locked up today. And I remember when their life really went went in the direction of this extreme levels of negativity. I'm not even going to say the type of stuff that they were into, was shortly after NWA dropped, when their album started to come out. And I remember my cousins used to sit up there and listen, and I would come and I would listen too. Thankfully, I didn't go down the same path, but I've noticed that their progressions and their criminal mindedness, there was a direct correlation to the types of music that they were listening to. And it's undeniable. Let me say this one other thing real quick. In the absence of having honorable men in your life, for you men out there who may be viewing this, when you don't have a proper example of a man, of a father who's there in your life, then any old thing will do. And what happens for, and then without question, and what happens for a lot of us, because we didn't have positive role models in our lives, our fathers were not there, or in some cases, our fathers were there where they were abusive. They were calling our mothers bitches too, and abusing our mothers and abusing us. When the music of a group like NWA comes in, now it becomes part of our voice, and we don't ask critical questions. We adopt it as a surrogate father, and then we don't question it.
Right.
And sometimes what we do, instead of questioning it and asking the critical questions, what do we say? Well, the music didn't have that big of an influence. Well, why do you defend it so much if it doesn't have that much? You know what I mean?
Oh my gosh, that's brilliant. Why are you fighting? I mean, if you spend any amount of time in the comment section, if you want to swim in that swamp of, you know, people who were so vehement in defending this and defending their right to be entertained by this and defending basically wanting permission for us to just be like, hey, that's okay. You know, mm-hmm. even though this is detrimental to your psyche, you go ahead and watch it because you want to be entertained. So you mm-hmm. go ahead.
Yeah, and people take it as entertainment, but I take it as an influential factor in the progressions of a human being's life. And in particular for children, a lot of us, we adopted hip hop in general, but for some of us, gangster rap as our surrogate father. And we don't want anyone to be critical about it. You'd be surprised at how many people don't.
Nobody wants anybody talking about their mama or their daddy.
That's right. Even if their mama and daddy is putting, it's devolving their reality as the musical genre is devolving their reality. And here's the thing, people, you can do what you want to, trust me. But I'll tell you one thing, that if you do continue to do what you're doing and you're unhappy with your life and you haven't been able to establish the type of relationship that you want or the type of family institution that you want, you got baby mama drama, you got a rap sheet as long as who knows what. Okay, keep doing what you're doing and you're going to continue to get the results. You know, insanity again is expecting different results while you're doing the same thing over and over again. Where if you're listening to the same type of negative, toxic music and you want to defend it so vehemently, don't expect any different results. My point is that as a man, someone has to stand up on this. You see what I'm Absolutely. Saying? Men and women need to stand up on. You'd be surprised at how many people are unwilling to stand up on this issue. And as men, we have to be at the forefront to defend the honor of women, but then also to maintain a positive representation of what it means to be a man, as opposed to the negative representations that we were given in hip hop in general, but in particular through groups like NWA.
Now, I want to switch gears for just a second, because you talked for the first half hour of this, we've talked about how the negative impact of this music has had on male-female relationships, specifically in the African-American community. Mm-hmm. But I believe it has also contributed to the limited relationship options that Black women have in terms of who's marriageable, who's a quality man. Now, this is where it gets sticky. This is where people get mad at me, because what I tell Black women is to not exclude Black men, of course not, because we have wonderful Black men such as yourself, but not enough. And what I teach is date the Black guy, date the white guy, date the red guy, date the blue guy, date the guy with purple polka dots. Date quality men and be open to all of that. That often translates for a lot of people as, oh, you hate Black men, or you're trying to destroy the Black family. And I'm like, wait, I'm trying to destroy the Black family? We have a 73% out of wedlock rate. Did I do that? We have the highest divorce rate. Did I do that? The lowest marriage rates. Did I do that? But A lot of people, my critics, tell me that because I'm married interracially, I have no right to speak out on these issues. I'm not black anymore. I have no right. What do you say to that?
Again, we are living in a post-segregation era. I don't know what you know, time warp people are in. This is 2015. And let me just say this, that the truth of the matter is there's just not enough good quality men, period.
Right.
Irrespective of the issue of race. Okay. However, within the African-American community, I mean, you got brothers that are calling women bitches and hoes. I mean, how does that translate in terms of being able to establish for an African-American woman to be able to establish a positive relationship with a man? In other words, let me phrase it this way. And I'm going to get to what you're saying here, but let me phrase it this way. That if you're an African-American man and you're doing things like disrespecting black women by calling them bitches and hoes and hood rats and maggots and ratchets. I mean, this is the terminology that is.
Yeah, I know.
Flowing, you know,
they're so ratchets, creative with their
beasties. You can go on and on and on. And you're doing that. You cannot expect to be honored in any way by an African-American woman, let alone establish a positive relationship with one. So what I'm saying is that in essence, you exclude yourself from the equation. It's not like African-American women are excluding you. I'm going to tell you one thing, that if I was a single man right now, you think I would have any problem with establishing a positive relationship with an African-American woman, assuming that she's single? I wouldn't have any problem with it. Why? Because of who I am, the character that I have. I'm not going around disrespecting women. I don't abuse them. I've lived a sexually disciplined life. A lot of African-American males, because of the music that they're listening to, engage in sexual promiscuity, and it's a badge of honor. This is what it means to men. Well, that devolves your reality, devolves your how women will see you. They won't see you as a prospective partner, as a prospective mate, as a prospective husband. That ain't got nothing to do with the African-American woman. That got everything to do with you. So what I tell men is very simple. When you
Church, amen.
Let me just say it. What I tell men is just get yourself together, and that's all you got to do. And I'm going to say this, and some women may say this is sexist, but I'm just going to say it, and this is just me being honest. Men understand that if you become an honorable man and all that entails, there's a lot of work that goes into that. You respect women, you honor them, you're going to be there to take care of them, to keep them safe. You're going to protect their honor. You're going to raise a family with them. You're going to commit. You're not going to deny them of any level of love or affection. You're not going to abuse them anyway. You're not going to cheat on them. If you're living as an honorable man, most genuine women will go along with you.
Exactly.
Because they will see you as an honorable man. But if you don't do that, you shouldn't expect any woman. And though what I'm saying is, it's not her fault that you don't have your stuff together. That's your fault. So get yourself together first.
What about this notion that it's the black woman's job to raise these men up and do the heavy lifting and, you know, dust them off and prop them up?
No. I'm going to say this, and this may be perceived to be sexist too. Women don't have the power to turn a boy into a man.
So wait, say that again. Repeat that again for the women who are listening to this.
And this is for anyone. This is outside of the concept of race. You don't have the power to raise a boy into a man. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what I'm saying is that if you're dealing with someone who is operating like a boy, and that's another thing, most people don't understand the differences between a boy and a man. So how are you going to marry a man, or how are you going to date a man if you don't even know the difference between a boy and a man? This is what I teach. I teach what are the differences between boys and men. Women have to understand it's not your job to try to raise this boy, an old male who's operating like a boy, and raise him and stick by him and try to do what you can to raise him up into a man so that he becomes what you need him to be. It doesn't work that way. He has to have the intestinal fortitude and the balls to do that for himself. That's part of what it means to become a man. Now, the problem is that for a lot of us, we don't have those types of male archetypes in our lives. We got think groups like NWA giving us the lessons on what it means to be a man. So it becomes very difficult for us to actually become men. We're still stuck in a state of arrested development, and we become dysfunctional as it relates to male-female relationships. For a lot of us, because we don't have that model of manhood, we aspire to a very devolved model. And then when we reach it, we think that somehow we're at the apex, and then now we become arrogant about it. And then we get into these relationships and we're still operating like a boy, still with this air of arrogance. And we assume that now the woman has to deal with us no matter what. And then they do everything. The woman takes care of the man. She may pay the rent. She may cook the food. She may take care of the children. He's playing video games. He's out partying, or he's going to go to the club, or he's going to go hang out with his homies, go play some basketball, things that boys do. Well, what I'm saying to you women is you have to understand that that's not your responsibility. What you're doing is you're setting yourself up for not only failure in male-female relationships, but to a great deal of heartache and suffering and pain. Women, you got to be very careful. Don't put yourself through that. Simply be patient enough and wise enough to seek out and or wait for the man who is of proper character. keyword, man, who is of proper character. And when you do that, it's this, I want to say this real quickly. My wife and I, we know this to be true from 14 years of being together. It is so easy. It is so easy to be in a positive relationship. The difficult part is being in a negative relationship. If you, I'm telling you, that's the most difficult part about male female relationships. It's not about when you're in a positive relationship, it is so easy to enjoy each other. You wake up every single day. It's wonderful. You're building a life together. You can have children. The children look like you, look like her. It's a beautiful thing. But when you're in a negative relationship, I'm going to tell you women right now, you are setting yourself for up for a negative relationship when you have in your mind that somehow it's your responsibility to raise this old male who is operating like a boy into a man. Why put yourself through that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I say that all the time. And I think that the men, particularly the black men who are fighting to defend this kind of music and fighting the idea of dehumanizing their own women, they're doing themselves a disservice, because now once black women have the agency, once they know, hey, I can go over there, and they're going over there, they're doing a disservice. It's like, hey, you can't go over there. You need to come back over here so I can call you a bitch. Get back over here, thought.
That's another term. I just learned that one maybe about 3 or 4 months ago. Someone had posted that on one of my posts I was doing on something else. I did these videos, Black Fridays, every once in a while.
And I love it.
A lot of people don't like those, but not a lot. But there are some people that just, it's too difficult. But so someone had said, yeah, one of the terms that people use is thought. And I said, well, what is that? And that means that hole over there. And I hear males. These are supposed to be conscious males in the African-American community. And there's, you know, these are supposed to be the black conscious guru archetype types of males. And they're calling women bitches and thoughts and maggots and so forth and so on. This speaks to the issue.
I was once called a beastie 9000. I'm like, really? Like, I'm a beast, what's a really ratchet black woman look like?
But I just want us to be clear about this for anyone who's listening to this. Notice the language. We are the only group of people, I'm talking about amongst African-American folk, who speak to each other in these ways.
Yes.
And we do it so freely. I mean, there's other people that may call, you know, their women bitches and stuff, you know, but it's not like so freely. And, you know, that means, in other words, that's who you are in thoughts. And then the slew of terms that we come up with.
It's so creative. African-American women about uplifting the people, though.
Yes, but understand this too. It would be fascinating for people to look at the verbiage and say, okay, how many negative terms that are there within the African-American community that describe males in a negative way, versus how many negative terms in the African-American community that are used to describe females in a negative, or women in a negative way? I would say that it's probably about 10 to 1.
Yes.
And that's a very conservative estimate. I would say that it's probably about 10 to 1. The point is that even in the manner in which we speak to each other speaks to the truth in terms of the levels of dysfunctionality that we have in male-female relations within the African-American community. So I'm going to say this, and people get mad if you want to. African-American women, if you have been dealing with African-American males who are of this quality, and it's a very low quality, let's just be honest, that it is within your right to keep your options open. In other words, there is no shackle, physical, literal, or figurative, right, that some or any law that somehow says that you have to stay and only deal with African-American men. Okay, because there are women who have been doing that, and now they're 30, now they're 40, now they're 45, and they've been unable to establish positive relationships or healthy family institutions. There's no law that says that you have to deal with that. Now, the other thing is this, that this does not mean that there aren't any good African-American men out there, because I will tell you that there are plenty of them out there. But what I am saying is that you should keep your options open. My wife and I, we have 5 children, and I have 3 daughters and or 2 daughters. One of my main concerns is that they won't be able to find when they get older. And they're only 7, 8, and 6. Okay. But I'm already thinking of this as their father. I'm concerned that they're going to have difficult time finding good men. Now, and I'm not saying African-American men or Latino or white or what. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying men in general, because the proportion of good, honorable men out there is just very low. You live in a sexist society with porn and all this misogyny and all these different levels of sexism, disrespect towards women. And we're raised in this culture that the amount of honorable men that are going to be accessible to women is going to be low all the way across the board. But I have these concerns for my daughters. And one of the reasons I'm saying this is because there's sometimes men take my message in the wrong way. They feel as if, and they feel threatened. And really what it is that for the first time in their life, they may be hearing a man who's speaking to them as their father should have spoke to them in the first place to keep them on the right path. So when they hear that energy and they hear the vigor in my voice, it makes them very uncomfortable. They're not used to that type of male fatherhood type of or fatherly type of energy. I do that because I want women to be able to experience positive relationships with men. And we got to turn men around, as, and this is part of my responsibility, is to help men get on the right path. But even just beyond this, into the next generation, I want more young males to be born, okay, who are my daughter's age, so that when they come up, they will have more options. And the options go beyond the concept of race, ladies and gentlemen, and it can make some people upset, but I don't play the race game. What I look for and what I want for my daughters and for my sons, for that matter, is positive, healthy relationships and healthy family institutions. However that materializes itself, it's perfectly fine with me.
Well, I'm so glad you said it, because, I'm so glad you said it. Now, I want to just shift things a little bit, because there was a question that I wanted to ask you, and I want to get it out of the way, because I know it's a potential rebuttal that people are going to have when it comes to the whole, the justification for doing a documentary and the critical analysis that you're putting into it. A lot of people are going to say, it's not our fault, it's the record company's fault. The largest consumers of rap music are white people. And what I try to say, what I say to people is this: white people consume this type of music from like a sociological perspective. Like, look at that over there. Like, look at those people. But they don't really absorb it. However, I feel like black people listen to that kind of music and they consume it psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's a difference between, you know, looking at this type of music as a social science experiment of people who are just over there that aren't affecting your reality, and then the people who absorb it psychologically and spiritually and consume it in that way.
Yes. Yes.
So, would you agree with that?
Yes. And I'll point this out, and because part of my research is I've gone back and looked at minstrel shows. I looked at, you can look at the blues. You can look at various genres of quote unquote African-American or black music. And you see this fascination within. And we'll get back to the other question. Just remind me what it was. But I just want to make this point out, because I will be pointing this out inside the documentary, that for quote unquote white people, that historically speaking, the entertainment genres of music that come out of the African-American community tend to be perceived as justifications for negative racial stereotypes that have long been held within the psyche of white people. And I'm talking about historically speaking, okay? So in other words, gangster rap legitimizes, you know, a segment of the population, the white population, who believe that African-American men are, they're thugs, okay? They're gangbangers, they're all gangbangers, okay? So in other words, these negative racial stereotypes, so it fortifies this reality. So in some cases, that's it. In some cases, it's just a form of entertainment. I don't know what it is, I haven't figured this out, but for whatever reason, the representation of the African-American experience, the base level, most difficult, heinous experience of the African-American historically has become, throughout time, has become a form of entertainment for other groups of people. But they only perceive it as entertainment. However, for the African-American, they perceive it as a self-identity.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? So yes. I'm really reiterating what you're saying, but I'm just taking it from the vantage point of how I'm going to explain it inside my documentary. They take it on as a persona.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great difference. That's a huge difference, because the persona ultimately transforms behavior patterns. And as it transforms behavior patterns, people begin to indoctrinate into the types of thoughts, the ideas and behavior patterns that are exhibited within the very music that they're listening to, which we cannot say for the other communities. This brother, just a quick example that comes to mind. This brother, he said one of the things people don't understand is, like, in particular, we were talking about gangster rap and N.W.A., but this can be applied to hip hop in general, hip hop music in general, that it's like an atomic bomb. And so when the atomic bomb goes off, everything that's closest to the epicenter it gets the most amount of destruction. Mm-hmm. And the further and further out you go, the less amount of destruction you have. So for the African-American experience, the atomic bomb is like right on top of us.
Yes.
Whereas other groups of people, they're on the periphery. So the impact and the devastation is not quite the same. And we got to be clear about that. Now, you had another question, since I can't remember what it was, but it was so important.
You talked about how people and you're probably going to get this rebuttal. Well, black people are, it's the record company.
Oh, yes.
They're the ones who, this, it's their fault.
Yes.
What do you say to that?
Well, in the case of NWA, their first album, it was underground. Okay, so this debunks that whole theory in and of itself. Okay, they didn't even have distribution. Basically, they distributed out of their trunks of their cars. You know, they didn't have record deals or anything like that. It wasn't until their second album that this actually took place. So in and of itself, we can't say that it was the entertainment industry or that it was white people or it was the global elite or it was the Illuminati that made them do this. I'm so tired of African-American folk using these types of excuses. Global white supremacy. I don't want to hear that shit. And I'm, excuse me. The reason
it's
why
Black Friday, you can say I don't
know. Now it's Friday today too, right?
Right.
I don't want to hear that. And the reason why I don't want to hear that is because as men, okay, not as boys who are always trying to make excuses. The difference between boys and men. Boys are always making excuses. Women, if you're dealing with males who are always making excuses, understand you're dealing with a boy. Men, we don't make excuses. We hold ourselves accountable. When we mess up, we mess up. When we do things that we know we shouldn't do, we hold ourselves accountable, myself included. I am by no means perfect. I have sexist views I'm still working through, and I will admit that to you all here. Okay, but I have enough sense to know that as a man, I'm not going to make excuses for anything that I do or for anything that any other African-American man or for any male for what he does. So what I'm saying here as I rant is simply this, that in the case of NWA, we can't use that as an excuse. And really, we shouldn't be using any excuse because within the African-American community, we do not have the luxury of trying to blame other people for our situation, nor do we have the luxury to try to legitimize different levels of abuse and that are committed by folk who look like us and somehow say that it's other people's fault. They're making them. There wasn't nobody making NWA write these rhymes, Ice Cube in particular. Let me read you this real quick. I'm just going to pull up any old track here.
Okay.
Here's one. What is this? 8 Ball. Okay, this is the remix. Riding on Saucer, looking for Crenshaw, turned down the sound to ditch the law, stopped at the light and had a fit because a Mexican almost wrecked my shit. Did white people make us say that? Let me give another example because we can make excuses all day. Here's another one. This is from Quiet on the Set. Ruthless, plenty of that and much more. So at the party, when it's controlling the floor that you step and do your dance routine, I ain't a dream, my man. You're in a gangster scene. With a villain doing damage on a 24 track with confusion to finish my conclusion. Arithmetic rhyme from a radio cat. You can't take what I got because I'll be taking it right back. Ruthless gangster, cold killing. You want to know what it means? Definition, villain. Is global white supremacy, did they write that shit? No. Who wrote that? We wrote that. So what I'm saying is that we're beyond a point where we can make excuses for this type of lyrical content or even behavior patterns. And one of the things I want our males to understand is that it's up to us to hold us accountable. Women should not have to be the ones at the forefront to try to keep us in line in these regards, disrespecting each other, and you know, glorifying violence against each other and abuse against each other as men, let alone against women. Women should not even have to worry about that. You think my wife has to worry about that? No, I'm on the front line of defense in those regards, and offense, if you will. For some of y'all, it's offense. You see it as offense, but it's really a defense and to defend the honor of African-American men too. What does it mean to be an honorable man? So what I'm saying is that at a certain point, we have to stop making excuses and hold ourselves accountable. The reason why is because if you can hold yourself accountable and hold other people, males, accountable in these regards, you take yourself one step closer to being in a position, characterized as a man, to be in a positive relationship with a woman and to establish a positive, healthy family institution. You can't do that if you're making excuses for all of this debauchery. You can't. So in other words, we can't do that. We can't come up with excuses. And I'm going to say it once again. Y'all will be surprised at how many men, and I'm so disappointed in these regards, how many men have, they've seen my early analysis because I'm building up to the releasing the documentary, and all they've been able to do is to defend NWA for various reasons. I am so disappointed in that. We got to set a higher standard for ourselves as men in terms of proper conduct and standing up righteously and with honor to not only defend the honor of women, but also to defend the honor of ourselves as men. The representation that NWA gave in terms of what it means to be a man is so devolved and so lowly. So we have to step up as men and not make any excuses for that.
Absolutely. I love what you just said. That's good. That should be like a separate segment in and of itself. Like you are going to have to come back to this channel.
Yes,
and
definitely.
We're going to have another discussion. Okay. So you and I are around the same age. Mm-hmm. We grew up around and we saw hip hop evolve. Now I was a big fan of EPMD, you know, the Dougie Fresh, all of that. Before NWA came in, 2 Live Crew, all that. It was so fun. I mean, wasn't hip hop fun? And I feel like NWA came in and groups like NWA came in and just shat on everything because you didn't hear all of this disrespect. I mean, you would see it maybe peppered here and there, mm-hmm. but it, you did not hear on the wide scale. And it was fun. We were having house parties, you know, playing, you know, listening to Kid and Play. I mean, it was a positive. It was something really good, you know. And then they just came in and shat on everything. And what happened was those types of positive groups or just neutral groups got pushed over to the side for more destructive things. And it wasn't even about, and I honestly, it's not some, like you said, it's not some conspiracy that white people were like, oh, this is right here. We can take this music and destroy the entire race by this. Nobody's thinking that far ahead. They're just trying to say, like, what sells? Like, what is
what can we make money off
enough for me to sell the mm-hmm. most money? Yeah. And this is.
Yes, yes. I want to be clear, because I will outline this in the documentary too. It's not that gangster rap started with N.W.A., because the precursor to N.W.A., and people can look into this for themselves, you can look into Schoolie D, you can look into Ice-T, and you can look into BDP, Boogie Down Productions, which was the group mm-hmm. with KRS-One. KRS-One, that first album, Criminal Minded, that was the forerunner for gangster rap. People just have to look at it critically. Of course, KRS-One, he progressed beyond that particular paradigm, but what N.W.A. did was not only did they adopt that paradigm, but they took it to the extreme.
And it devolved it. Instead of evolving, they went further into it.
Yes, and because it was so popular and it made so much money, it set a new standard in the entertainment industry. Well, if we can make money off of this and this type of negative music, then we'll go ahead and go with it. But that doesn't give us the right to not hold folk accountable within the African-American community for listening to it, for producing it, for buying the albums, for rah-rahing it, or allowing it to transform the reality in a negative way. So what I'm saying is that hip-hop, in essence, was a party music. It was about having a good time, in essence. Okay, so even we go to the early 70s, its evolution, it was about having a good time. It was about dance music. And that's why the DJ was so very important. But you saw this transition wherein the DJ became less important, and then more focus came onto the MC, and now the MC becomes a rapper. Now they become the headline, and now the lyrics become more and more important. The problem with that was that now the lyrical content, in terms of its impact and influence, was greater than just listening to instrumental music, the DJ playing or scratching. And the problem was that so much of the lyrical content was negative. Okay. And it was negative with BDP. There was also negativity within Dougie Fresh. I remember one of the albums he did, I can't remember, or the songs that he was, you know, I want to look it up. You know, I don't want your, he was talking to a woman's that he was involved with, her mother. And he says, I don't want your wrinkled pussy. I can't be your lover. And I mean, when I heard that, I mean, I might have been about, I don't know, 8, 9 years old or something.
You're like, oh,
wow. But you know what? I used to always go back and listen it on my little tape. You all remember the tapes?
Yeah. Rewinding.
I don't know nothing about that. Okay. I used to have it and I used to hide it in my room. And I used to come and whenever my mom wasn't around, I would put it in and I would listen to it on headphones and I'd be in the corner listening to it. But it's just negativity. So the other thing I just want to say this is that the negative elements that we find in NWA were present in hip hop before NWA came onto the scene. The difference was that NWA took it all to an extreme level and glorified it. Okay, but then within the entertainment industry, there was a concerted effort to adopt that particular style and then use derivatives of it. And because that particular style was so negative, all the derivatives that began to come out of that, going into Death Row, and then now it goes into the Dirty South. Now all that becomes more and more disrespectful, more and more misogynistic, more and more hateful, more and more vile, more and more a lot of promotion of sexual promiscuity amongst the male demographic. This had a very destructive impact. So in other words, NWA historically, in terms of what they set in motion in the entertainment industry, in particular within the hip hop genre, had not been done before and has not been done since. And that's why I think focusing on a critical analysis of this particular group is key.
Now, tell us about what the overview will be of the documentary, how your financing is, because I think people want to know how they can assist, because I know I want to know, like, how I can help you.
Yeah, so my documentary is a critical analysis of NWA. There's different phases, and I have the phase. Let me go by each one. There's 7 different phases, okay? The first phase is the research phase, and I'm just about done with that. I really am done with that, but I just ordered 5 more books that I'm going to be reading because I like to have my research in order whenever I do documentaries. I've been researching, and it's not that I hadn't done research before, but I'm specifically focusing in on NWA. The research phase is study. Books, reading books, but then also looking at videos on YouTube. I spend hundreds of hours looking at video interviews of NWA members going all the way back to the day. Also, more recently, there's a lot of videos that have been coming up since the documentary, Straight Outta Compton came out, where they have older, they're older now, but they talk about different experiences in NWA. Michelle A, what's the other, DJ Yella, different people. They have these different insights. So I'm in the research phase, but then there's also the data collection phase. The data collection phase was when I went through NWA's discography. There's four albums in discography. I went album by album, track by track, and wrote down what were the major themes that were being presented. And then I put all of that together. And so let me just real quickly here. One of the major themes, of course, the major theme is disrespect of women, 553 times on four albums. The use of the term nigga, 385 times. Self-aggrandizement, which we see amongst African-American males a lot. That is when you boast about how great you are and usually you disrespect other people, including women, because it makes you feel better about yourself. This is a self-esteem issue, which a lot of African-American males struggle with. A lot of the African-American males on YouTube who talk a lot of trash about women and have all these negative things, and they're calling women bitches, hoes, and thoughts, and ratchet, and beasties, and maggots. These are older males who are broken, and they have low levels of self-esteem. And so what they do is they self-aggrandize. They always try to make themselves appear to be better than what they are. Reference to calling women bitches 208 times, the term fuck 198 times, motherfucker 197 times, which was one of my favorites growing up. Disrespect of other men 193 times. So not just disrespect women, but also disrespect men. Using the word shit 134 times, using the word dick 96 times, references to guns, again, violence 93 times, disrespect of other rappers 91. So I have, you know, pages and pages of this. This is the data collection phase. That's all done. Okay, so that's stage one. The next stage, and that's what I'm working on now, is the funding and the script writing, okay? The funding, I'm going to be launching a crowdfunding campaign for this documentary on the 1st of October.
Okay.
But I also have a page already set up for anyone who wants to donate now on linenhonor.com. You can go to linenhonor.com, linenhonor.com/NWA, and there's a PayPal button there. But again, at the first of next month, which will be October, I will be launching an Indiegogo campaign for the documentary. That will be the third stage, because I'll be writing the script while I'm doing the crowdfunding campaign, which will run for 5 weeks. During that time, and I'm already started this process, which is the interview process, or I'm securing interview guests who will appear inside the documentary. So I'll have updates for people in terms of the people who will be included in the documentary. Once the crowdfunding campaign is completed, that's when I will go out and I will record people, video recording, and then I will bring it all back home and start the editing process. By that time, the script will be done. I'll have the video footage and I'll begin to edit down the actual documentary. I'm also working on a soundtrack. Okay, this is stage number five. Not only a soundtrack, ambiance music for the background, because I'm a musician for the actual documentary, but I also have songs that I've written, lyrical songs that I'm producing that will be in line with the positive message of positive male-female relationships, respecting women, respecting men for that matter, establishing healthy family institutions, going beyond the negative racial stereotypes that are out there that many of us, we need to do. We really need to go beyond these negative racial stereotypes. I'm putting together a soundtrack and a full album music to complement the documentary as well. And then, by the time the soundtrack is done, now we move to the DVD duplication. That's why I actually duplicate the DVD. There's other steps in between this too, like formatting for the DVD and then getting the inserts for the DVD and all that stuff too. I have all the outline in my notes, but DVD duplication, that's number six. And then of course, seven, and that's the final step. And that's why I'll begin to distribute the actual documentary.
Yeah, that's not complicated at all.
No, not at
that's
all.
Not a lot.
It is a lot, but it's going to get done, because I think that this is an excellent time. This is a primary time because the Straight Outta Compton movie came out. And so this whole NWA thing is fresh in people's minds. And a lot of people are indoctrinated now. Younger people are going back and listening to the music. It has a very detrimental effect. This cannot be denied. And people, for those of y'all men and women who defend it, you really have to take a critical look at yourself. You got to take a critical look at your own mental aptitude in terms of critical thinking. If it's calling women a bitch, even if you say that they're not talking about you as a woman, you should say, you know what? They shouldn't be calling my sisters that.
Right.
If they're calling, you know, brothers niggas, and you don't, maybe you say, well, they're not talking about me and I don't call. But yeah, but if they're calling your brothers and niggas, I'm going to tell you this. They use the term nigga 385 times. How many times did NWA in their music say, I love you?
Never.
Not once. How many times did they say, you know, you have to be a father to your children?
Not once.
Not once. How many times did they say, you know, we need to respect and honor and defend women?
Nope.
This is critical thinking to ask.
I mean, was there appreciation of Black beauty at all? I mean, it was more of a, how can I exploit this girl? How can I get over? How can I abuse her in some way? I mean, that's pretty much all it was. Now, here's my turn to pitch. Now, here my audience here, and I'm also going to appeal to your audience because I'm sure they're watching this too. Now is the time to be about the change that you want to see. So you see somebody, and we all know it's very, very rare to see positive Black men like this on YouTube who are trying to uplift, who are in defense of Black women, because I'm going to use my platform to promote men, I don't care what color they are, who have any sort of a voice. I'm promoting, I'm going to promote them because they are coming to our aid. Like, we need to start defending ourselves, but we also need to step back and let, like you said, Lennon, let the men do the heavy lifting.
It's our responsibility. It's our responsibility. It's not y'all's responsibility. I know y'all want to. I understand that, but really, it's up to us. We got to be the ones that you know do the hard heavy lifting as it were. Mm-hmm. My wife, absolutely, she don't have to do, even in my own household, when stuff needs to be lifted. Baby, let me get that for you.
Let me get that for you.
Okay, let me be a service to you.
There's a pride in that.
Yeah, it makes me feel like a man. A lot of you dudes, you be talking all that shit. You know, I don't want to do nothing for no women. I don't need to. They need to be in service to me. Yeah, but that, you don't feel like a man.
Exactly.
You know, feel like a man is when you're able to contribute to a woman's life and make their life better. And I'm living testimony to this. I wake up every single day and I know I'm the bomb. Not because I'm a man, but because I have value to my wife.
Yes.
So for you men out there, if you don't have much value to women, that don't be so boastful. Don't be so braggadocious. What you need to do is work on yourself so that you can have something of value and consequence to offer. When you have something of value and consequence, boy, I'm going to tell you, man, it all turns around like that.
Absolutely.
You start to enjoy
women. I'm sure your kids just love you.
That's what I'm saying. You just talk to women. You enjoy it. I'm telling y'all, the folk I enjoy talking to the most is women. It don't mean I only enjoy talking to men, but part of it is because I've had 14 years of really appreciating my wife, appreciating how she talks. Women do talk a little bit different than men, and their voice inflections. There's a pleasantness that you derive out of the experience, but only through practice. You can't derive that when you're doing the opposite, when you're on YouTube talking poorly about women, or you say, you know, women are bitches. No, it's okay to call them bitches. I have men saying this. How can you say that? How can you say that it's okay to call the women bitches when you came out of the last I checked, you came out of a woman's vagina. Last I check, a woman carried you for 9 months so that you can actually have life. How can you even say something like that? So what I'm saying is that part of the issue for a lot of men is that they haven't had the practical examples in their lives from their fathers, and then they haven't had the practical experiences to know why it's important to value women. And when you value women, you step up to the plate and you make sure that they don't have to deal with the stuff that they don't have to deal with. And I'm telling y'all, you women, you shouldn't have to be dealing with men who are out here causing all this trauma and pain, whether it's in relationships or on YouTube or what have you, on Facebook. You shouldn't have to deal. That's our responsibility as honorable men. We should be the ones to take care of that. And that's what I'm doing. And for any of you brothers who are down with it, I don't care where you from, how you look, what your skin color is, or your hair texture. Don't make me no difference. You can see right here, I ain't got much going on myself. It don't make me no difference. If you're down for that cause, I'm rolling with you. If you're not, well, stay in your lane, bro.
Now, I want you to give that link to where people can donate right now. And I want everybody who's listening to me and listening to Lennon right now to go to this link and donate. We, you know, people are raising money for all kinds of phony stuff.
Yes.
But Lennon has been an example. He is about what, you know, he puts his life where his mouth is. He is walking the walk and talking the talk. It's Friday. You probably just got paid. Go put some money in that tip jar. Friday night.
You said it's Friday. Okay. We all know y'all just got paid. Yes, the link is linenhonor.com/NWA.
Okay, and I'm going to go there right now, and I'm going to put some money in that jar.
Please do, because I really do need the support. Again, I got 5 babies to take care of, and we already struggle. I'm just going to be honest with people. I'm an honest man. We struggle because we do so much to help other people, and a lot of the stuff that we do for free. You know, my wife and I, the way that we're living a different type of life. So it's about giving to people, and we want to make sure that we're able to get this project done, and we do need y'all's support. I also should mention that I do have a crowdfunding campaign. It'll be on Indiegogo that will launch on October 1st. You can also donate there, but I want to encourage people to donate at linenhonor.com/NWA for now. And I also want to mention that the perks that I list on the Indiegogo campaign, whatever you offer or whatever you contribute to on my website, linenhonor.com/NWA, I'll provide you that perk. Okay, based on how much you send. So don't worry about that. But we do need the funds to keep this project moving forward. I want to thank you all so much too in advance. Okay.
Well, you've got my 100% support, and I will make sure that I put another push on the blog and on all my social media networks on October 1st to remind everybody, because let me tell you something, my audience of Black women, we educate and we have money.
That's good.
We got a little bit of change. So y'all, you educated quality Black woman, this is the kind of man that I have been teaching, preaching, and nagging about, and this is the kind of man that you need to support. Men like Lennon could change the world. Seriously, they could definitely change what's happening in the Black community. This is the kind of leader that you should be looking to, not some fake Hotep dude that, you know, is like, you know, proposing polygamy to solve the problems.
That's a whole nother topic. We have, next time I come on, let's tackle that particular issue.
I know, let's just debunk all of this fake conscious stuff that's going on. Anyway, yeah, it's a whole other conversation, but I want to thank you so much. It has been such a pleasure to listen to you speak, but I want to continue. And so everybody, again, I'm going to put that link out. Lennon Honor, that's LennonHonor/NWA. Go put a little change in his jar. I'm about to right now. Lennon, go and enjoy your family and enjoy your weekend. And thank you again so much.
Oh, it has been my pleasure. I want to send you lots of love from the Honor family to your wonderful family. I saw one of your sons in one of the videos. He was peeking in the back of your brother. Handsome young man. We might have to make arrangements. I got two young daughters. Okay.
I know. We might be having to make
arrangements. But I want to thank you too. And I want to thank you for the work that you're doing, because it's clear to me that you want the best, you know, in terms of relationships for all women, but in particular for African-American women. And we need that too. We need that outlet for women, you know, keep your options open, but also to have positive reinforcement. It's one thing. And I just want to say this, that this is one thing when you hear it from people, they're telling you that you should be doing this, or you should be doing that, but they're not living examples of what they're teaching. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. But we have to be careful, especially in the African-American community, because there are a lot of people who are simply hustlers. We have to be careful. You want to go to the people who have a level of success in terms of what they're talking about. So if they're talking about positive relationships, they should have success in that area. If they're talking about what it means to be a man, they should be upstanding men. And I'm going to tell y'all right now, who I am is who I am. I'm by no means perfect. I still have sexist issues that I'm dealing with. You know, every single day I have things that come up. There's issues that I'm dealing with as a man. And I've been working on myself for a long time, a couple of decades now. Like, I still got a long way to go. But I do know this, that what I do speak about at this point is reflective of my progressions and who I am as a man right now. I'm getting better. And thankfully, I'm going to continue to help other males to do the same and help them to raise their sons, so that some of y'all women out there, your daughters will have better choices. You know, they'll have more options in hand. And I'm going to say this last point. I have three boys that are under my care and under my attention and affection and love and guidance and protection. The oldest right now, he's 11. The middle one is 10. And I got a 4-year-old. I'm telling y'all right now, that these three young brothers, they will be better men than I am.
Yes.
They will be better men. And that says a lot, because it speaks the truth in the power that we have when we have a healthy family institution and you got the man and the woman working together to raise these babies up. So just think about that. My sons may be where I'm at in terms of intellectually and respect for women when they're 17 or 18 or 19. It can be done, you see, but it comes from initially the interaction of men and women when we establish positive relationships. And again, just like you preach, it doesn't matter the skin color. It doesn't matter the hair texture. It doesn't matter the cultural background. It doesn't even matter the religion so much, if you want to be progressive. What it comes down to is our ability to establish positive relationships, because when you establish positive relationships, irrespective of those other issues, you set the foundation for the positive family institution. When you set the foundation for a positive family institution, you are raising these babies in an environment that is so empowering and so enriching and so loving that they have no other recourse than to shine brighter than what you were able to shine. And that's what I'm seeking to do with my sons. You see? And so you women out there, you got these young girls, don't worry. There's more on the way. There's going to be some
tomorrow men on the way. You're cultivating them. You're grooming them. I've got three girls, Lennon. So I've got 4 kids in all, 3 girls, and they're all beautiful. And
what are the ages?
You know, one of my middle daughters, she's 12. So
okay, all right. Well, you know, the oldest is 11. You know, I'm no pressure. I'm just saying. But I do think about that.
But we don't live too far away from each other. True. Maybe we should make some introductions.
No, we might have to, you know, have what do they call that, a play date where the children can
exactly
how they interact.
That's right. Yeah. Well, again, thank you so much. And this will not be the last time, you guys, that we have Lennon on, because it was so fun. I mean, like, Lennon, you can just carry the show. I can just sit here. This is the easiest interview I've ever had to do. I don't even have to say anything. You just go.
Well, I enjoyed it, and I appreciate the opportunity, and thank you too for the support and opening me up to your audience. I do appreciate it. I support what you're doing. I really do, and my wife is supportive too. Okay, so
and I just want you to know that my fans were the ones who told me you existed. They were like, okay, you need to see this. So there's some crossover that's happening, and we just capitalized off of what was already starting to become, you know, just a little bit of a germinated seed.
Yes, yes. And thank you to your audience for introducing my work to you. I really appreciate that too. It's a wonderful thing. Again, I'm so thankful, and I'm excited too. You know, this project is going to be a major, major project. I look forward to coming back to talk with you as I continue to progress. It's going to be fun, I'm sure.
Absolutely. All right. Well, it was great talking to you guys. Again, if you guys want to reach out to me, if you guys have other ideas for live Google Hangouts, email me at Crystalyn, CHRISTELYN, @beyondblackwhite.com. Everybody have a great weekend. Bye.
Bye-bye.